Hello and welcome to KUAR's Week in Review, the podcast that keeps you up to speed on the major happenings in Arkansas over the last week. Coming up,
U.S. Senate Republicans unveil a long-awaited bill to replace the Affordable Care Act. How will it affect Arkansans on the exchanges and on the Medicaid rolls? Senator Tom Cotton helped shape it with a select group of senators in secret, but he's been silent. Why? Also thoughts from other Republicans, Democrats, and all sorts of people in between.
After the Arkansas legislature passed a range of bills further restricting abortion in the state, a flurry of lawsuits challenged them. We look at legal filings this week from the ACLU, Planned Parenthood, and the Center for Reproductive Rights.
And a controversial herbicide may be on its way out in Arkansas, an update on dicamba, and why so many Arkansas farmers are anxious.
That's coming up on KUAR's Week in Review. I'm Chris Hickey.
And I'm Jacob Kaufman.
Well, the news this week centered around Congress, especially Republican efforts to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. And
with,
of course,
the Better Care Reconciliation Act.
Yes, a 142-page bill that was released on Thursday. Day before, you just hear this sound here from protesters outside of Tom Cotton and John Bozeman's Little Rock offices, our two U.S. senators. These demonstrators, organized by Arkansas community organizations, literally put lipstick on a papier-mâché pig outside the Victory Building in Little Rock as an effort to symbolize what they felt was the kind of dressing over of a healthcare bill produced by House Republicans. It was just a redressing. So let's hear from Tony Orr. He's a local labor organizer, commenting on this whole phenomenon.
You try to put lipstick on this broken down healthcare bill that they're trying to ram through, it still is going to be a pig, no matter how cosmetic you try to make it.
And the protesters went inside, delivered about 1,000 petition cards each to Bozeman and Cotton's offices. Here's a demonstrator, Camille Richou of Little Rock, addressing the woman working at the front desk in Cotton's office.
Arkansans need to know what is in this bill. We need as much time that was spent hearings on the Affordable Care Act, on this reform, that this needs to be a bipartisan effort, and no cuts to the Medicaid expansion. Do not roll out the Medicaid expansion.
So you hear her there mentioning a couple of key points here. The amount of time spent on this healthcare legislation, Republicans in the Senate have really been focused on getting out a bill as soon as they can. And of course, she mentioned their Medicaid expansion. And now that we have details of the bill, and I'm sure both you and I have read the 142 pages, Jacob, in
I do
detail.
Have several provisions we could read off.
Okay. Well, first of all, let's talk about the timeline and how this bill was crafted, and then we'll get into some of the meatier aspects, like what it does to Medicaid expansion. So first of all, how is it crafted?
Of course, we all recall the House-backed version of repeal and replace bill passed some time ago, but didn't have any Senate traction. There was some division among Arkansas's congressional delegation about this. Of course, to remember, all six of our congressmen are Republicans, and all six want Obamacare repealed and replaced in some form or fashion. But this Senate bill was crafted in secret, so to speak, behind closed doors. Several Republican senators weren't even aware of exactly what was in the bill when it was being crafted. Our own Senator Tom Cotton, who's risen to some acclaim, he was one of 13 white male senators crafting this bill. Although, funny enough, even though he posted the draft text on his website, he hasn't had a comment out where he explicitly says, like, I want to vote for this plan that I helped create. And he's had numerous media opportunities and press releases since then, but hasn't addressed that. They haven't had a Congressional Budget Office score yet, and that's the thing that tells you how many people would lose or gain insurance over a period of time and how much the plan will cost. So it's kind of hard to evaluate independently some of these things, but the senators, they're ready to vote on it as early as next Thursday without having this information. At least that's what the leadership wants to do.
And of course, Senate Democrats are universally opposed to this legislation.
You mentioned Tony Orr, who I worked with way back when in 2008 or 2009, and he was also doing stuff with trying to get the Affordable Care Act passed. And then it was like a summer's worth of town halls and amendments and Mike Ross trading votes or not trading votes. And there's things like the public option being debated. None of this is happening this time around. It's a prepackaged deal that people worked at in advance out of the public sphere.
It's certainly a delicate dance that Republicans in the Senate are dealing with. On the one hand, they also have their moderate members of their party who don't want to see a rollback of too many of the benefits of the Affordable Care Act because they see it as potentially limiting them politically in the future. Well, on the other hand, you have the most conservative members of the party saying that bills like these, the American Health Care Act that was passed in the House, didn't go far enough in the repeal and replace of Obamacare. And so this week, immediately after the Senate bill came out, you had four Republican senators, Ted Cruz among them, a few others on the far conservative side, Rand Paul, I think, saying that they wouldn't support it in its current form, but they're amenable to possible changes to get more of what they want. We'll see how that goes. Of course, that means right now the Senate bill is a few votes short of the needed majority to pass. Anyways, let's get into what it does to Medicaid expansion. Of course, in Arkansas, we've taken advantage of Medicaid expansion through programs like the Private Option, Arkansas Works, what have you, that were available under the Affordable Care Act, expanding health insurance coverage to people making up to 138% of the federal poverty level. And over 250,000 Arkansans have since benefited. Jacob, what does this do to Medicaid expansion, this bill?
This would begin phasing out the idea of Medicaid expansion in 2021 and end the program effectively by 2024. So as you mentioned, about 250,000 Arkansans would lose insurance coverage under this. And one argument made by the Mike Beebe administration all the time when they first passed Arkansas's version of Medicaid expansion, which instead of putting people on Medicaid, instead uses that money to buy them private insurance, is that since they were put on the private market, that drove down everybody else's premiums, even if you weren't on Medicaid, because we had an influx of people paying into the private insurance plan. So it's good for private insurance. So that could affect other people's things as well. So that's one big tenet of all this. And that's something Governor Asa Hutchinson has said in the past, that he wants the existing Medicaid population to still be protected in some form. That is definitely not the case, I guess, under this bill. They would not continue to receive totally subsidized government insurance. Also, people who are on the exchanges who get subsidies, they get less subsidies, although slightly more people would qualify to be on the exchanges. One big deal is that conservatives like it would end the individual mandate and penalties for failing to buy insurance. So that's obviously a big talking point among conservatives. The last thing is it reverses like hundreds of millions of dollars in tax cuts for insurance companies and the wealthiest Americans in the country that were being used to help pay for people to get insurance.
I guess all in all, it does maintain some of the existing framework of the Affordable Care Act, which is the subsidizing of private insurance purchased through marketplaces, although it does change.
For like middle-class people.
Yeah, although it kind of rolls back the amount of subsidy that someone can get on those exchanges. We know that our two senators, as we talked about, have been pretty silent on this issue, even Tom Cotton, who helped shape it. But, Jacob, you did speak to a congressman, Rick Crawford of Arkansas's 1st District, which encompasses much of East Arkansas.
Well, it would be unfair of me to make any kind of a characterization or contrast or comparison because I simply haven't read it. And so anything I could add would comments I make, I think, would be probably inappropriate at this point in time, having not had eyes on the bill myself.
I thank the congressman for answering a few questions about healthcare that I asked him at the end of an interview about Cuba, which is one of his major issues. But basically, yeah, no one's really commented on the bill. They might vote on it next week, the Senate, and then there's a recess after that. So before it heads to the House, there'll be some time, if it passes, for everyone to kind of adjust, I guess, and talk to their constituents. But so I didn't ask him about some of the details of the bill since he hasn't read it yet, but Representative Crawford did say about the pace of it in terms of how the Senate crafted it. He likes that it's moving really quickly.
You know, I don't fault them for moving expeditiously, and quite frankly, one of the things that we routinely chide the Senate for is their inability to move quickly. So I don't think that, when they start to move quickly, we probably ought to welcome that, and particularly in light of the situation here with Obamacare and in the final stages of implosion. I think it probably is prudent for them to move as, you know, with as much speed as they can muster.
Final stages of implosion for Obamacare. Those are pretty strong words.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's something we've heard about since before it passed, even, that Obamacare is going to collapse. There have been a number of insurers that moved out of certain markets. Liberal proponents of the Affordable Care Act will say a lot of the insurers that are dropping out of markets are in states that didn't fully participate or get Medicaid expansion and things like that. And states like Arkansas that have participated haven't suffered a major loss of insurers trying to flee the state, though there have been one or two that have left.
And I think there's some a little agreement on both sides of the aisle that there are certain ways that the law can improve. I was talking with Michael John Gray, the Democratic Party chairman of Arkansas earlier, and he mentioned several times in the interview that he felt that insurance premiums were too high in many cases and that prescription drug costs were also too high in America. And he felt that the Senate bill did not really address either of those problems in a substantial way. We'll see, I guess, what happens with it, whether or not this has any legs politically. It's hard to say whether it will pass out of the Senate at this point, given that those four conservative senators are still opposed. And, of course, we'll await what our own two senators
And if you'll
do.
Refer to last week's podcast, Chris and I read a segment of Vox, I believe, is Vox interviewing John Bozeman about the healthcare bill, and they're asking him, so what are the mechanisms in this bill that will curtail costs or control costs? And he didn't have a specific answer for that then, so we might see it in the days ahead now that the draft of the bill is out. A couple of quick roundup points from the rest of the political scene. Rob Reyers, who's running against Steve Womack in the Republican primary, and Paul Spencer, who might run as a Democrat against French Hill in the 2nd District, they both are in favor for Medicare for All type schemes. So while they support the Affordable Care Act, or they don't want it repealed anyway, they certainly want different changes to the healthcare system. People who are opposed to this aren't necessarily for the status quo either.
All right. Well, one of the provisions of this Senate bill would actually defund Planned Parenthood for 1 year. And of course, Planned Parenthood provides a range of medical and healthcare services to women and men across the country and in Arkansas. And coincidence among all this is that Planned Parenthood, along with a couple of other groups, filed a lawsuit in federal court this week challenging a few recently passed Arkansas laws that put further restrictions on abortion in the state. Of course, over the last few legislative sessions, since Republicans have gained control of the Arkansas legislature, you've seen a renewed push to introduce further restrictions on abortion. Jacob, you've been following this and listened into a press conference.
I did listen to a teleconference.
With the ACLU. And can give us a better idea. What are these laws that are being challenged, first of all, and then what are the challenges saying about them?
I can do that. I'll give it a go, okay? So there's two different federal lawsuits filed. Here's the first one. It's by the American Civil Liberties Union, the national organization, the ACLU of Arkansas, the local chapter, and the Center for Reproductive Rights. This is the first federal suit. There's four main provisions based, I believe, on four different new state laws. Many of these will take effect in July or the end of July. A few of them will take effect in January, barring some sort of injunction in federal court. So one would ban dilation and evacuation. That's a very commonly used second trimester abortion procedure. I'm trying to remember back when they held session in the early spring, I think it's something like 20 to 30% of abortions in Arkansas are affected by this. So a pretty significant amount of women would lose access during that time. Another part of this would be a woman's partner or family would have to be notified of the abortion, which of course is like a huge change to the idea of who controls a woman's autonomy when you have to notify the woman's partner or family members. And partner for this could include some sort of sexual abuse case or something. The partner would still have to be notified under this. There's not like a carve out for a rapist to not be notified or something. Let's play this cut here. This is from Talcott Camp with the National American Civil Liberties Union organization. Here's one provision where if a minor has an abortion, local authorities would have to be informed.
An abortion provider must notify local police where the patient lives, you know, what the patient's identity is, that she has had an abortion, and they have to preserve the tissue from the abortion as so-called evidence, and the local police are supposed to come and collect it.
Another one in this same case, similar strain, the idea of medical records privacy that's kind of thrown out. Doctors would be required to request a lot of different medical records and information about the patient, even if it's not necessarily pertinent to the medical procedure of an abortion. So that's something you wouldn't have to do for any other procedure, provide your entire medical history necessarily. So that's one of the two lawsuits. Second one is the ACLU and Planned Parenthood of the Great Plains, which includes Arkansas in addition to three or four other states. Here's the clinical director at Little Rock Family Planning Services, Lori Williams, talking about how there's an unfair requirement for medical clinics that do abortions compared to any other conceivable medical procedure.
Abortion is an exceedingly safe procedure with complication rates that are far lower than the complication rates of other medical procedures. This law singles out abortion facilities for differential treatment for no legitimate health or safety reason. By requiring the excessive penalty of license suspension or revocation for any violation of law or regulation, no matter how minor.
So these two lawsuits in federal court on four or five different bills there passed in the state legislature, it was announced as part of like a national day from the ACLU and others of like updates on restrictive abortion laws. And it's kind of interesting. Arkansas was definitely the focus of their attention. They mentioned a few laws in Texas and elsewhere, but these laws in Arkansas, they said some of them they haven't seen before. So I think one of the phrases someone used was the legislature is showing its capacity to be creatively cruel. So it's a new level of laws that perhaps they didn't expect before. Of course, the backers of this law, i.e. the majority of Arkansans, the majority of the state legislature, Jerry Cox at Family Council, he thinks that some of these laws will probably still stand.
I believe some of them will. I don't know which ones. And some of it, unfortunately, depends on how the activist judges decide to treat them. I have seen time and time again very good common sense laws passed by the legislature, supported by an overwhelming number of people here in Arkansas, and some judge strikes it down.
So women's reproductive health advocates will say, you know, you don't really care about the safety of women. This is just about restricting abortion because you don't believe in it and you're trying to shut it down. But Jerry Cox says that's not what he's trying to do. He's just trying to make it safe. He doesn't like it, of course.
Women need to be treated safely, treated with respect, and these laws do not stop abortions, but they do make the situation safer for women and girls.
But of course, objectively, things like banning the second trimester abortion procedure absolutely will stop certain abortions.
I found it also remarkable that he characterized just a blanket characterization of judges as all activist judges.
Yeah, Rita Sklar with the ACLU in a separate press conference held the same day about these lawsuits said something to the effect of, everyone who passed these knows that they're unconstitutional and that they will be struck down in court. Jerry Cox in the past has said about different laws that they may run afoul of a court law, but he wants to press the needle and challenge it and make the court reevaluate it. That's how courts make different decisions. You have to keep putting it in front of them to push the needle.
Any idea when these will get a hearing?
Nope. The people who want to block these laws are hoping it's before July 30th when some of them start to go into effect. Well, Chris, we've come to the point of the podcast where you've done a great job introducing the two main topics at hand. Of course, the Affordable Care Act repeal and replacement and the changes to abortion laws and the challenges to them. But now it's time for you to sit back and answer some questions from me and the listeners. So let's go to my favorite topic from our last podcast, dicamba, the herbicide that kills pigweed, which is a tremendous aid to some soybean farmers. However, if you don't have a dicamba-resistant crop, it can do immense damage to your soybeans. The plant board is monitoring like a growing mountain of complaints. What's going on with this?
Well, the news today, as we record this, is that the Arkansas Plant Board voted to ban the sale and use of the herbicide dicamba. Now, dicamba is sprayed on soybean fields, as you mentioned, genetically resistant soybean fields, genetically tolerant of dicamba, which is a very strong chemical that's used to kill pigweed, which in the last few years has grown resistant to Roundup, which is a commonly used herbicide.
Can't put lipstick on a pigweed.
No, that's for sure, no. And so BASF, this chemical company, is producing dicamba that goes along with a genetically resistant soybean produced by Monsanto. But not all farmers have been buying into this new product. They've been using the old product, or they've been growing other crops that don't have any genetically resistant varieties. And so sometimes this dicamba gets sprayed in a field, gets blown in the wind, and it damages these other crops, or at least it produces suspected damage. And it's been a growing problem this year. You know, this is Friday, 240 complaints in 19 counties that the plant board is soon to investigate. And they took immediate action. Last week, a subcommittee recommended this ban, and today the Arkansas Plant Board voted for it. It still has to be approved by the governor and the legislative council in order to fully take effect. It's hard to say what this will mean in terms of, you know, economics and everything for, you know, soybean is the number one crop in Arkansas and grown all over East Arkansas. And I think it will mean basically that if farmers want to weed their fields, they'll have to employ physical labor. So that could be an extra cost of labor. You know, margins are kind of tight in terms of the agricultural economy. So
I've been kind of following the actions of this for a couple of weeks now. At any time, have you heard anyone, farmers, the state plant board or something, talk about how other states are dealing with this?
I know that surrounding states like Tennessee and Missouri have also received a number of complaints that are related to dicamba use. I don't know how widespread it is in those other states compared to here. And I don't know if any other states are considering a full-out ban. You know, there are several kind of varieties of dicamba also, and only one product is allowed in Arkansas produced by BASF. I think there are other stronger forms that were outlawed. All right, that's our agricultural segment. Well, thanks for listening to KUAR and the Week in Review podcast. We're online at KUAR.org, on the air at 89.1 FM. in Little Rock, and we
welcome your subscription to this podcast.
You can download our program on our website, KUAR.org, or on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And we're editorially independent, but listener-supported service, University of Arkansas at Little Rock.
Go Trojans.
And we hope you have a good weekend.
Bye.